the elephant in the room. That is why trust is so important. You have to become more vulnerable with each other and be willing to be straight about real problems. Remember, the greater good. The time spent identifying the real issue can take far longer than the time used for the second and third steps, and that's okay. That's because the root problem may have multiple symptoms. Put another way, sometimes you will spend most of your time identifying the issue. As a result, the discuss and solve steps will take just a few minutes because the real issue is now clear. Here's an example. The stated issue is that John's customers are too demanding. John runs the warehouse and has been complaining that between ordering and receiving products, customers are expecting too much with a 2-day delivery time. By discussing the issue, you go from thinking that John's customers are too demanding to thinking you might not be communicating with your clients as well as you should. As you dig further, you might find that maybe the process isn't working. But through more digging, you discover that it's John that isn't working. All the way down at the bottom, you realize that John is in the wrong seat. The reality is that the customer's 2-day delivery request is very reasonable. And if you don't achieve it, the company will start losing those customers. John is just incapable of organizing, managing, and getting product out on time. He doesn't have the capacity. Remember GWC. So, assuming you've now clearly identified the real issue, John is in the wrong seat, you can now move on to discuss what to do. Sometimes this process feels a bit like peeling an onion. One helpful context when identifying is to understand that there are three types of issues. One is a true problem that has to be solved. The second is information that needs to be communicated and agreed to by the team. The third is an idea or opportunity that needs feedback, brainstorming, insight, and/or a green light from the team. As a result, in the identify step, it's the issue owner's responsibility to make it clear what type of issue it is and what is needed. For instance, if it's the second type of issue, the owner starts IDS by stating, "I just want to make sure that everyone is clear and agrees on the new pricing policy." This will help the entire team know the objective and makes for much more efficient issue resolution. Step 2. Discuss. Most people spend the majority of their time at this step. They rarely identify the real problem before they start discussing, and thus they rarely solve anything. They just discuss everything ad nauseum, and they actually think they are being productive. The task of clearly identifying an issue enables you to stay focused on the issue at hand and avoid tangents. Once the issue is clearly identified, don't be afraid to suggest a solution. Sometimes you don't have to spend much time in the discussion step because the issue is so clear and the solution is so obvious. In the earlier example of John, what more is there to discuss? The solution is to people analyze John, sit down with him, determine if he can correct his issues, and then follow the 3-strike rule. Taking a shot at voicing a solution forces others to react, which prompts a fuller discussion. In its simplest form, the discussion step is everyone's opportunity to say everything they have to say about the issue. You get everything on the table in an open environment where nothing is sacred. Everyone should say what they believe, but they should say it only once, because more than once is politicking. In the discussion step, you'll need to fight for the greater good, not what is best for you or your department. If an issue is starting to hit home and the solution causes you discomfort, you must try not to push the solution in a direction that's more favorable to you or your team. If you do, you aren't fighting for the greater good of the company, you're just protecting your turf. You should have healthy conflict and let the best solution come to light, even if it causes you some pain. Likewise, when the discussion starts to become redundant, it's time to move to step 3. But before we do, let's have a quick word on tangents. tangent alert. RE/MAX First was suffering from veering off on tangents more than any other client I had ever had, so much so that I was running out of ways to help them. As a last resort, I looked up the definition of the word in the dictionary and wrote it in big block letters in front of them. When they came back from break, this is what they saw. Tangent, diverging from an original purpose or course. See irrelevant. That did the trick. To this day, they are one of the best at staying focused and are now much more productive. Incidentally, after that meeting, they went on to have their most profitable year in the history of the company. The number one reason most leadership teams spend the majority of their time talking is tangents. I've observed teams that go on as many as 10 during the discussion of one issue. I know this because I write each of them down and then share them when the team is done discussing. That can be a great wake-up call. They'll start out talking about increasing sales, and 5 tangents later, they're talking about letterhead. The conversation goes like this: sales are down, we have to increase sales. Then someone brings up the salespeople and what they are doing. And from there, we discuss one of the salespeople, Jack. Then the subject of Jack leads to that of Jack and Sue in accounting not getting along. This leads to the question, did Sue send the letter to customers who are past due, which raises the question, did she use the new letterhead? You don't have to sit there helplessly. When someone starts to go on a tangent, get in the habit of saying, tangent alert. It's a friendly triggering mechanism that keeps you on track. If the tangent is a real issue, but not relevant to the current one being discussed, put it on the issues list and get to it in order of priority. Upon the completion of the discussion step, all of your options, data, ideas, solutions, and concerns regarding the issue at hand will be out in the open. This enables you to move to step 3, making the issue go away forever. Step 3, solve. The solve step is a conclusion or solution that usually becomes an action item for someone to do. The item ends up on the to-do list, and when the action item is completed, the issue goes away forever. George Pearls, the head football coach of the Michigan State Spartans from 1983 to 1994, once gave a dinner talk at a function I attended. He shared a mantra from his days as an assistant coach for the Pittsburgh Steelers during their heyday in the 1970s. He said, "We made every decision like we were going to the Super Bowl, and they ended up winning the Super Bowl 4 times." That is what every leadership team needs to do. You should make all of your decisions as though you are going to your own Super Bowl, as though you were achieving your vision. It's important to note that you cannot jump right to solving issues without implementing the vision component first. If your Vision Traction Organizer, VTO, is not complete and your leadership isn't on the same page, you'll never solve issues well. It's like driving a car, not having a destination, and making turns randomly. If you don't know where you're going, you can't make decisions on which way to turn. Where decisions may have been difficult in the past, this step becomes much easier when your vision is clear. Solving issues takes time. By solving issues now, you'll save time exponentially across departments by eliminating all future symptomatic issues. The old days of shoving issues to the side so you can make it to next week have to come to an end. Jury-rigging problems with duct tape and twine will become a thing of the past. To build a well-oiled machine, you have to solve issues for the long term in accordance with your vision. 3 types of resolutions will emerge from an issues-solving session. The first is when the issue is solved and requires action. For instance, John is going to revise the accounts receivable past due letter to include the new language. In this case, John takes the action item and completes it, and it is solved. The second is when the issue is merely awareness, and the conclusion is that everyone concurs with that awareness. For instance, okay, so we all agree that meetings will start on time. The third is when the issue needs more research or facts. In this case, someone is assigned an action item to do the research and bring it to a subsequent meeting. For example, Bill will gather the client data for the last 2 years, and we will make the issue a top priority in next week's meeting. As you master this third step of the issues-solving track and become stronger at solving your own issues, your team must internalize the following 10 important aspects of solving issues. The 10 Commandments of Solving Issues. 1. Thou shalt not rule by consensus. On a healthy team where the vision is clear and everyone is on the same page, 8 out of 10 times everyone will agree with the solution. However, sometimes they won't, and someone needs to make the final decision. Consensus management does not work, period. Eventually, it will put you out of business. Not everyone will be pleased in these situations, but as long as they have been heard and if the team is healthy, they can usually live with it and will support the decision. From there, you must present a united front moving forward. One of the worst cases of consensus management was a company being run by its next generation of family members. The company's growth was stagnant, and some tough decisions needed to be made to restore profitability. In our first few sessions, every time a hard decision needed to be made, the team would either retreat out of fear of hurting someone's feelings, or someone would say, "Let's vote." This had been going on for years. They were some of the nicest people you could ever meet, yet they would come to the next session complaining about all of the same issues and how nothing was working. After a year of forcing more openness and a few very uncomfortable sessions for some people, one of the owners finally stepped up as the integrator and started to make the tough decisions. Finally, the ship is starting to turn around for them. In countless cases of tough decisions, I've observed that in instances when the team was divided, if the integrator had gone along with the majority, it would have been the wrong decision. In a Fortune magazine issue on decision-making, Jim Collins is quoted as saying that in his years and years of research, no major decision we've studied was ever taken at a point of unanimous agreement. 2. Thou shalt not be a weenie. The solution will always be simple. It's just not always easy to implement. You must have strong will, have firm resolve, and be willing to make the tough decision. 3. Thou shalt be decisive. Remember the study from Think and Grow Rich. The 25,000 people who failed lacked the ability to make decisions and procrastinated, whereas the several hundred millionaires made decisions quickly and changed them slowly. Remember, it's less important what you decide than it is that you decide. So, decide. 4. Thou shalt not rely on second-hand information. You cannot solve an issue involving multiple people without all the parties present. If the issue at hand involves more than the people in the room, schedule a time when everyone can attend. Tyler Smith of Niche Retail calls these powwows. When someone brings him an issue involving others or second-hand information, he says, "Time for a powwow," and pulls everyone involved together and solves it. 5. Thou shalt fight for the greater good. Put your egos, titles, emotions, and past beliefs aside. Focus on the vision for your organization. You will cut through the candy coating, personalities, and politics. If you stay focused on the greater good, it will lead you to better and faster decisions. 6. Thou shalt not try to solve them all. Take issues one at a time in order of priority. What counts is not quantity, but quality. You're never going to solve them all. The faster you understand that, the better your odds are of staying sane. Solve the most important one first, and then move on to the next. 7. Thou shalt live with it, end it, or change it. This is another great lesson from my dad. In solving an issue, you have three options. You can either live with it, end it, or change it. There are no others. With this understanding, you must decide which of the three it's going to be. If you can no longer live with the issue, you have two options: change it or end it. If you don't have the wherewithal to do those, then agree to live with it and stop complaining. Living with it should, however, be the last resort. 8. Thou shalt choose short-term pain and suffering. Both long-term and short-term pain require suffering. Remember the 36 hours of pain rule and solve your problems now rather than later. 9. Thou shalt enter the danger. The issue that you fear the most is the one you most need to discuss and resolve. 10. Thou shalt take a shot. Taking a shot means that you should propose a solution. Don't wait around for someone else to solve it. If you're wrong, your team will let you know. Sometimes the discussion can drag on because everyone is afraid to voice a solution, even though someone may have it right at the tip of his or her tongue. Often, a team will discuss an issue for far too long. They'll be stuck, and no one will be offering solutions, when suddenly the quietest person in the room might speak up and suggest something. There might be a silence, then someone who says, "That's a good idea," and everyone agrees. Don't be afraid to take a shot. Yours might be the good idea. One important point. When the issue is completely solved, someone must make the solution statement. For example, in the case of John being in the wrong seat, someone states the solution: Barbara will sit down with John and discuss the warehouse seat issue, offer him the assistant manager seat, and see if he wants it. If not, we will part ways. You'll know after the statement that the problem is solved because you'll hear the sweet sound of agreement in the room. The issue is then owned by someone, in this case Barbara. It's added to the to-do list, and it gets done. Occasionally, after the solution statement, someone will say, "Wait a minute, that is not what I heard," and the discussion will begin again. That's okay. You're creating clarity and getting everyone on the same page. Be patient. The issues solving track always follows the three steps: identify, discuss, and solve. The acronym for the track is IDS. As you move forward in mastering these six key components, IDS will become an important aspect of your day-to-day running of the business. From now on, when faced with an issue, you simply IDS it. The power and simplicity of IDS is demonstrated by two EOS clients who do business together. They were facing some tough issues, so they scheduled a meeting. They sat down in the conference room, and one walked up to the whiteboard and wrote this: IDS. The other smiled, and they went to work and resolved all of their issues. Not only does the issues solving track work internally, but it works externally as well. The ability to IDS it became a common language between the two of them, and it's helped them not only to achieve resolution, but also to get there faster. The Personal Issues Solving Session. Building a healthy team is not always a smooth process. If a team is not opening up, it might be because two individuals don't get along. They may even be at odds with one another. When this situation occurs, you must resolve the tension. Sometimes it's the only obstacle holding you back from being a functional, cohesive team. And you need a functional, cohesive team to be a healthy, growing company. A personal issues solving session usually provides the remedy. This is an opportunity for the two people involved to come together to clear the air and resolve their differences. It's recommended that you have a third party facilitate the session. 1. Have each person prepare and then share with the other what he or she believes the other's three greatest strengths and three greatest weaknesses are. 2. List all the issues and solve them. 3. List the action items from the solutions. 4. Meet 30 days later to make certain that the action items have been accomplished. 9 out of 10 times, their differences will be resolved. In rare cases, they can't be, and you have a tough decision to make because one must go for the greater good of the team. The analogy of the dying plant applies here. Once you cut off the dying limb, the plant flourishes, just as your team will. This is sometimes a hard pill to swallow, but assuming you've conducted the personal issues solving session and exhausted every other option, it's what's best for the health of the team. Hopefully, the dismissed member can be relocated to another team in the organization. Even in a healthy company, though, not everyone is going to get along like best friends. We're talking solely about building productive business relationships, as well as any personal issues severe enough to hinder the team from being frank about the company's needs. With the issues component clear, you can create an open and honest organization that comfortably calls out issues and uses the issues list and the issues solving track to document and eliminate them. You're growing closer to reaching your full potential as a business. You are now ready to work on the most neglected component of all, the secret ingredient of building a successful, well-run business: process. Summary: the issues component, the issues list, open and honest, three types of issues lists, the issues solving track, identify, discuss, solve, no tangents, the 10 commandments of solving issues, personal issues solving session. Chapter 7, the process component, finding your way. When Jim Weikert, the founder of Weikert Realtors, one of the largest real estate companies in the world with over 19,000 salespeople and over 500 offices, was asked the secret of his success, he gave a one-word answer: consistency. That means consistency works. Consistency allows him to scale his business. As a result, he has built a solid organization that has endured for almost four decades. Nothing can be fine-tuned until it's first consistent. The process component is strengthened through your understanding of the handful of core processes, on average about seven, that make up your unique business model. You then have to make sure that everyone in your organization understands them, values them, and follows them. This component is the most neglected one, often taken for granted and undervalued by entrepreneurs and leaders. Yet the successful ones see what process can do for them. By not giving this component your full attention, it's costing you money, time, efficiency, and control. Imagine once again that you could rise above and look down on your organization. How would it look? What are all of the moving parts? You should take this high-level view from time to time and appreciate what you have. Sometimes you can take what's been built for granted. To paraphrase philosopher and logician Kurt Gödel, you can't be in a system while at the same time understanding the system you're in. In other words, you need to raise your head from time to time and see the system for what it is, whether it's good or bad. We are normally so buried in the day-to-day scramble that we never take the time to do this. Yet you'll see something new every time you do. A typical organization operates through a handful of core processes. How these processes work together is its unique system. To break through the ceiling and build a well-oiled machine, you need to possess the ability to systemize. That is what this chapter is all about: helping you systemize what you've built. You'll discover different ways to improve upon your processes, simplify them, apply technology to them, and most important of all, make them consistent throughout your organization. Michael Gerber, author of The E-Myth and The E-Myth Revisited, calls this your franchise prototype. To the degree you can clarify your systems and hone them, you will run your business as opposed to having your business run you. The culmination of identifying, documenting, and having everyone follow the core processes of your business is your way. When you have a clear way, you immediately increase the value of your business, strengthen your control over it, and give yourself options. From there, you may grow the business, let someone else run it, sell it, or simply take more time off. Countless business owners complain about their lack of control or freedom, and yet in the same breath, discount the value of process. It's like the story of the dog sitting on a nail. A gentleman walks up to a farmhouse. On the porch is an old man sitting in his rocking chair, and next to him is his old dog. The old dog is moaning, so the gentleman asks the old man why. "It's because he's sitting on a nail," the old man replies. "Why doesn't he move?" asks the gentleman. "Because it's not hurting enough for him to move." Those business owners complaining about lack of control and freedom need to get off the nail and work on systemizing their businesses. In many organizations, people do their jobs however they want, resulting in tremendous inefficiencies and inconsistencies being embedded in the system. If they really saw all the variations, most business owners would be shocked. Many of them are just plain afraid to uncover what's really going on. They cross their fingers and hope that the company will keep chugging along. A good example of a company that gained the power of the process component is Franklin Communities. It owns and manages 8 manufactured home communities. Despite being in a stereotyped business, owners Ron and Andy Blank have broken the mold. They run a tight ship. They implement every EOS tool to the letter. With the help of an amazing and tenacious operations person, Shelley Taylor, they created their way and ran with it. With the help of a strong sales team led by Larry Lawson, each of the 8 managers runs his or her communities by the book. The result is an occupancy rate that has the competition scratching their heads. While the industry's occupancies are dropping, Franklin's have steadily increased over the last 4 years. To systemize your organization through your core processes, you must take 2 major steps. First, you have to document the core processes. Second, you have to ensure that they are followed by all. Let's start with documenting. Documenting your core processes. There are 3 stages in documenting your way. First, identify your core processes. Then break down what happens in each one and document it. Finally, compile the information into a single package for everyone in your company. Identify your core processes. To start off, schedule an hour with your leadership team. This is not an assignment to delegate to one person. Take this initial step together so that you're calling your core processes the same thing. Entrepreneurs tend to claim they already know what the processes are. I frequently get resistance on the need to call this meeting at all. Every time I suggest it, the reaction is, "Oh, we can do that in 5 minutes." I've yet to see a team do it in less than an hour. Here's why. Your leadership team needs to identify and agree on what to call your core processes. Once you start the discussion, you're going to find you have different names for them and lack consensus on how many there are. Your core processes typically include the following. The HR process is the way you search, find, hire, orient, manage, review, promote, retain, and fire people. The marketing process is the way you get your message to your target audience and generate interest in what you do and prospects for your salespeople. The sales process is the way you convert a prospect into a customer. The operations processes are the way you make your product or provide your service to the customer. There are typically 1 to 3 core processes within operations, for example, project management, logistics, warehouse distribution, service technicians, account management, service delivery, production, quality control, customer service. The accounting process is the flow and management of all monies coming in and going out. The customer retention process is the proactive way that you take care of your customers after your product or service has been delivered, and the way you retain customers so that they continue to come back and send you referrals. No matter how many core processes you have, you need to identify the ones that address every activity going on in the business. then list them in one document, and make sure that your leadership team is 100% on the same page with the amount, the names, and what they are. It's surprising how productive this step is. The exercise creates clarity of thought that is then put down in black and white. You will find it to be worth every minute of the hour you spend. You will realize a return on the time invested quickly as a result of everyone immediately speaking the same language. Now that you've identified each core process and have a name for each one, everyone must call each of them by the exact same name from this day forward. If the way you manage your accounts is called the customer care process, everyone must call it that. Just by calling your core processes by consistent names, you reduce complexity and increase efficiency in the organization. Document each of the core processes. In this step, the accountability chart comes into play. The person that is accountable for a certain process takes charge of documenting it. The head of sales and marketing takes the sales process and the marketing process. The head of operations takes the 1 to 3 operations processes, and so on. The integrator usually owns the entire project, making sure everyone is clear and on track. To avoid wasting time, make sure you've completed the first step of identifying your core processes before you start documenting. A single example will show why. One client skipped step 1 and went ahead and documented all the procedures in the organization. When the client was done, it had 100 separate procedures documented on its intranet. This work was not a total waste, but once the client went back to step 1 and agreed on its 7 core processes, each of the 100 procedures suddenly took on meaning because it became a part of one of their 7 core processes. The client found that the procedures were much better organized and could be transferred to all of its 120 employees. Still, it would have saved a lot of time and effort to identify the core processes first. When documenting the processes, you should follow the 20-80 rule. That means document the 20% that produces 80% of the results. In other words, document at a very high level. You should not be creating a 500-page document. The 20-80 rule gives you the highest return on your time invested. The trap many organizations fall into is wasting valuable time trying to document 100% of everything. If you document 100% of a core process, it might take 30 pages. If you document the most important 20%, you should need around 6 pages. A similar common problem is trying to document every single little detail down to the nth degree. This is overkill. You just need to capture the basic steps in the process, because the real problem is that people are skipping steps, and not always on purpose. Festering problems then blow up weeks or months down the road. In the heat of the uproar, you treat the symptom and not the root cause, which was that someone skipped a step. There is always an uncomfortable laugh when I share this truth. You need to document the steps in the process at a very high level, with several bullets under each step, which are procedures. This way, you can make sure everyone is following the process. What you're illustrating are the basic guideposts to helping your people become consistent and efficient in your organization. The following is an example of a documented process. The HR process. Step 1, the search. Define role, job description, salary, the seat. Decide search medium. Begin search. Email 20 Sphere peers. Step 2, interviewing. Screen resumes. Initial interview, profiling tools. Second interview. Check references. CEO interview, core values speech. Step 3, hiring. 8-hour on-the-job trial. Decision. 90-day trial. Step 4, orientation. HR policy review employee manual. Benefits review forms. Position training. CEO orientation, company story, culture. Step 5, quarterly reviews. Manager fills out the people analyzer in preparation for the review. Follow the review checklist. Review the people analyzer. Document the review and have it signed by all parties. File review with HR department. Step 6, termination. 3-strike rule with documentation. Terminate upon third strike. Contact legal counsel. Meet with employee, have HR present. Exit interview. Document termination and have it signed by all parties. Step 7, ongoing benefits management. 401k management, bonus plan, health insurance, employee files. In the end, each core process will run between 2 and 10 pages. Operations processes are usually the longest. Don't be totally constricted by the 20-80 rule. Include whatever you feel is necessary, just make sure you keep it simple. Once you start to document, you're going to uncover some hidden bones. Some steps will be in place that don't have to be. You won't understand how the heck they ever got there in the first place. When you ask why, you'll hear responses such as, "Well, we've always done it that way." A man was once with his wife's family for Thanksgiving. During the preparation of the meal, he observed his wife cutting the back of a ham off before putting it in the oven. Curious, he asked her why she cut the back off the ham. She responded, "It's tradition. It's the way we've always done it in our family." Her mother had just arrived, so he took the opportunity to go over and ask why they cut off the back of a ham. She said, "It's tradition. It's the way we've always done it." Fortunately, his wife's grandmother was there as well, so he went to her and asked the same question. She replied, "Once upon a time, the pan was too small, and it was the only way to get the ham to fit in the pan." Your people doing things because they've always done them that way is not good enough. With the opportunity to build a well-oiled machine, you must now be able to show them a better way. As you simplify, most of the time you will find that your core processes are too complex. By documenting the process, you will find many opportunities to dumb them down by eliminating redundant steps, taking out any confusion and any complexity. The goal is to streamline. Eliminate steps, condense steps, and put checklists in place where possible. Some steps in your processes will easily be converted to checklists that can be used on the floor or in the field. You should make your processes bulletproof so that no one can screw them up. Checklists have been an extremely effective tool for my clients to create consistency, quality control, and repeatable results. Please consider this heavily when documenting your core processes. There's a reason pilots and healthcare professionals use them. Countless studies have shown the considerable difference between using them or not. Use them for proposals, events, project management, and account management, to name a few. Another advantage of simplifying each of the processes is to discover where technology can be applied. To connect core processes or to enhance them on their own realizes efficiencies and increases your profitability. There are great software systems that can connect your core processes and eliminate redundant steps, but make sure the investment of time and money will actually produce a return. Don't implement technology for technology's sake, leading to unnecessary headaches. In my previous business, I made a move that I call the $45,000 mistake. We needed a technology to manage the list that was created from our target market, as covered in Chapter 3. We kept a tremendous amount of information and history on our clients and prospects. We also needed to tie all of our North American trainers together. I engaged an organization that claimed to have the latest and greatest technology. They were going to create the ideal software for us from scratch. This software would connect sales, marketing, and operations. After months and months of work and $45,000 spent creating the software, we scrapped it. Instead, we used a simple $500 off-the-shelf product that did everything we needed. The mistake I made was in not taking a close look at the process and the market for software. I got too caught up in the sizzle of what that particular software company was promising. Technology must improve your way. That means you must research and then decide based on creating efficiencies and simplification, not hype. The other reason you must document and simplify your processes is that your business has to become self-sustaining. It has to be able to run without you. You have to get your key processes out of your head and onto paper. God forbid something happens to you or any of your people. If one of you disappeared tomorrow, could someone step in and pick up right where you left off? They should be able to, and by doing this step, you'll ensure that they can. Package it. Good news. Now that your core processes are documented, step 3 is the easiest of all. Here's where you take all of the great work you've done in steps 1 and 2 and package it. The titles of your core processes now become your table of contents. Each documented process in step 2 becomes one of your sections. You put them in a binder or on your company intranet. On the cover, put your company name followed by the word way. If your company name is the ABC Company, then it should read the ABC Company Way. Your way is now ready to use for reference and training. That's when the real magic happens. Now everyone in the company can be trained to follow the correct process. This happened at an upscale pub and billiards restaurant called Roosevelt's. After co-owner Bill Guitry got his team in place, they went to work on documenting and simplifying their way. The business model has become successful enough that they are now opening a second location. Followed by all. When everyone follows their process, it's much easier for managers to manage, troubleshoot, identify, and solve issues, and therefore grow the business. The clear lines of process enable you to let go and gain more control. Your business now becomes more scalable, which means that you can add more customers, transactions, revenue, and employees while reducing complexity. In order to implement this crucial step, your leadership team must be convinced that everyone should follow one system. To convince your people to follow the process, your leadership team needs to be committed to managing all of the people to make the adjustment. If you are all committed, it will work. If you're not, it won't. Do as I say, not as I do is not effective management. I say this because most of the time, this step fails because the owner or owners are not willing to follow the process. Assuming you're convinced, the following step requires you to convince your people. You have to consider their point of view. If you didn't see the value in following a process before, how can you expect your people to see the value now? What you need to show is how the new system will create efficiencies to make their lives easier and the company more successful. They need to understand how the processes tie together into a complete system. You shouldn't expect them to put you on their shoulders and carry you out of the room cheering, but do expect them to follow their assigned processes. While this isn't quite like announcing a company-wide 25% raise, you should present it with the same enthusiasm. If you have the right people in the right seats, they will see the value, appreciate it, and benefit from it. One of the best ways to convince them is by creating a clear visual of what your way looks like. Business processes are often intangible and therefore tough for people to understand. To the degree that you can illustrate what it looks like, you will accomplish this objective. Sash Construction came up with a great illustration. Owner Todd Sash created a model of how all the processes work together in his organization. When he did his presentation on the importance of everyone following a process, his visual showed how every time a person follows a step in the process, it affects others. He called it the circle of life. Just as in nature, everyone in the organization depends on each other to thrive. By everyone following their process, everyone's life is ultimately going to be better. The opposite holds true as well. When someone doesn't follow the process, it has a negative effect on others in the organization. This knowledge actually motivates his people to work together and help make each process better. As a result, all processes in his way are understood, embraced, and followed by everyone in his organization. Followed by all action steps. 1. Create your circle of life visual. 2. Schedule a company meeting to share your way, or share it at your next quarterly company meeting. 3. Retrain everyone. 4. Manage your people to follow the processes. With your business systemized, you can better troubleshoot when problems arise, since many of them result from process-related issues. For instance, maybe there's an invoice that didn't go out due to the customer service representative not forwarding a copy of the order form to accounting. Track the problem to the source and solve it. When a problem occurs, you can go right to the step that is not working and alter or eliminate it. In some cases, you may add a new step. But you're simply performing maintenance at this point. You now have everything you need to get your way followed by all. Strengthening the process component will give you more control. You will have options with your business to grow it, step away from it, sell it, maintain it, franchise it, or duplicate it in another city. Whichever option you choose, your organization's value has increased. Your organization will be worth more as a result. This is what people that purchase businesses are looking for, a turnkey system. For instance, the owners of Image One were approached by a billion-dollar publicly traded company in the same industry and eventually sold to them. The president of the division at the time, who previously worked for Jack Welch at GE, said that Image One was one of the best-run companies he'd ever seen. With the mastery of the process component, you're closing in on achieving your destination. You're now ready to bring it all down to the ground with the final piece of the puzzle, the traction component. Summary: the process component. Documenting your core processes. Identify your core processes. Document and simplify them, 20/80 rule. Package them into one source. Followed by all. Create your circle of life model. Train everyone. Manage people to follow the core processes. Chapter 8. The Traction Component. From Luftmensch to Action. Action is the process of doing. That's what this chapter is all about. Gaining traction means making your vision a reality. At this moment, your vision is crystal clear. You have the right people in the right seats, you're managing data, you're solving your issues, and you've defined your way of doing business, and everyone is following it. Now you're ready to master organizational traction, the final piece of the puzzle. Mastering the first five components was essential before tackling this component, because without them, you might gain traction, but in the wrong direction. When the first five components are strong, you will take off in the right direction, toward your vision. The ability to create accountability and discipline, and then execute, is the area of greatest weakness in most organizations. If I asked you to rate the level of accountability in your organization on a scale of 1 to 10, with 10 being your perfect level of accountability, how would you rate it? Successful leaders rate themselves high because they know how to gain traction. When meeting with the average new client for the first time, though, they typically rate their current accountability at 4. This is a real shame, because the world is filled with many great visions. Unfortunately, most will go unrealized due to an inability to gain traction. Visionaries like to stay on a high plane, not at ground level. After more than 20 years of observing failures, I realized how to bridge the gap between vision and execution. I recently learned a word that makes the point. Luftmensch is a Yiddish word made from two others. Luft means air, and Mensch means person. A Luftmensch is an air person, someone who has his or her head in the clouds. I don't mean this as an insult. Ideas come from having your head in the clouds. Most visionaries would agree with me. That is their gift, their strength, and their value. Nothing exists without visionaries. Yet once the vision is clear, you need to go from Luftmensch to action. Most leaders know that bringing discipline and accountability to the organization will make people a little uncomfortable. That's an inevitable part of creating traction. What usually holds an organization back is the fear of creating this discomfort. But you don't have any other option if you want to build a great company. If you can accept the fact that you're going to make people a little uncomfortable for a short time, the solution is actually straightforward. You need to implement two simple practices. As with all the steps along the way, this one requires a total commitment from the leadership team. There will be far too many opportunities to pull back and retreat. If your leadership can stay the course, however, within months, your people will appreciate the increased accountability, improved communication, and solid results. The discomfort you were concerned about turns out to be not nearly as bad as you thought. And truth be told, the people who continue to resist are either the wrong people or in the wrong seat. This is one of the secrets to the EOS methodology. We don't let leadership teams turn back. For that, they eventually thank us and say they don't know how they could previously have lived without this high level of traction, accountability, and results. What are the two disciplines needed to gain traction? First, everyone must set specific, measurable priorities. Second, you must meet better as an organization. These two essentials are called ROCKS and a meeting pulse. Before we dig deeper into each of the disciplines, I offer some before and after statements from clients that have fully implemented these traction tools. You or your people may relate to them. Before traction. No accountability. I really didn't know who I was accountable to. Although we agreed to meet on a regular basis, in actuality we didn't. We lacked accountability and focus. Before ROCKS, there was no clarity. Poor communication. I felt alone in my understanding of what was needed in the company. I also was misunderstood. I've worked here for over 20 years, and before ROCKS, I was never in the loop. Stagnation. We were fairly disciplined about creating one-year goals, but would frequently find ourselves at the end of the year having made no substantive progress toward those goals. It was tough to stay focused on them throughout the year. We had no clear direction or priority. Everything was important, and as a result, our efforts were not directed where they were most effective. We suffered from the classic show up and work for work's sake. Everything was a priority. Chaos. It was tough to get out of the day-to-day emergencies and focus on the most important priorities. We didn't meet very often. Coming to a decision could take weeks, and we always had to re-present the information. Things slipped through the cracks. No structure, lack of communication around goals and issues. Problems were not resolved and they just stacked up. We had no method to measure results. We were very reactionary, dealing with the problem of the week or month. It was not clear whose job was whose, so I always felt everything was on my shoulders and I had to do it all. After traction. Accountability. After ROCKS, everyone on the team has responsibility, clarity, and timing on what has to get done. Also, each team member is clear on his or her accountability. Everyone is on the same page. I see us now working more as a cohesive unit with purpose and direction. We are working toward closure with issues, employee accountability, and job responsibilities. We now have some organization with a focus on what we do best. With the rocks and meeting pulse in place, I feel the ability for me and my team to focus better on the big picture items. More is getting done in the same amount of time, and we have a heightened sense of urgency to get things done by certain due dates. Communication. The meetings are 90 minutes and no longer. It's taking time, but I can now see the benefits of having weekly meetings as opposed to monthly. Now, at least with the rocks and weekly meetings, I get a sense of priority, and I know what direction the company is going. The meeting pulses have really served as an excellent communication vehicle to cascade messages within our rapidly changing environment. Organization. Rocks gave me a way to check in with my reports and drive better results in a highly consistent manner. Life after rocks is very rewarding. All players are on the same page. We are focused toward a common goal. There is clarity in both expectations and direction. We can clearly identify weak performers and those that do not fit within our organization. Truly, it is like night and day. Rocks keep everyone focused and allow us to work toward one-year goals in bite-sized chunks. Rocks have become the measurable and the lingo of our organization. We see employees seriously approaching their rocks with a sense of pride and commitment. Traction. Now I feel that the forward momentum is turbocharging our organization by getting everyone to help row the boat. With rocks, we have found the way to achieve goals, hold people accountable, and move in a positive direction on a continuous basis. Now we are getting ahead of the problems and pushing into prediction and working on our systems. We have more time to work forward, not deal with past problems. Rocks. With a clear long-term vision in place, you're ready to establish short-term priorities that contribute to achieving your vision. You will establish the 3 to 7 most important priorities for the company, the ones that must be done in the next 90 days. Those priorities are called rocks. One of our students at the sales training company illustrated the power of setting 90-day priorities. In the days when his family picked cotton by hand, the student said he would stand at the foot of the field, look out at the acres and acres of cotton, and feel overwhelmed by the work that needed to be done. To make the prospect of picking all those acres less overwhelming, someone would pick up a stick and throw it as far as he or she could. Then everyone would just put their heads down and pick to the stick. When they got there, they'd pick up that stick, throw it out again, and repeat the process. That's why you create a 90-day world. Rather than be overwhelmed by the monumental task of accomplishing your vision, this allows you to break it down into bite-sized chunks called rocks and focus on making it to the stick. Your company will have rocks. Each member of your leadership team will have rocks. And your employees will also have rocks. The reason to limit rocks to 3 to 7, preferably closer to 3, is that you're going to break the organization of the habit of trying to focus on everything at once. It simply can't be done. By limiting priorities, you can focus on what is most important. With the increased intensity of focusing on a limited number of rocks, your people will accomplish more. Remember the old saying, when everything is important, nothing is important. The way you move the company forward is one 90-day period at a time. Rocks create a short-term focus, similar to the point I raised earlier from Al Reese's book, Focus. To the degree that you focus everyone in one direction, you'll gain the power of that laser beam, gaining traction toward your goals. Once your vision is clear, you will set better rocks. Setting these priorities becomes simple. Once you set the company rocks and then the leadership team's rocks, you then communicate these rocks to the entire organization so they can set theirs. This process creates alignment. The exact process for establishing ROCs as a team and then rolling out this process organization-wide will be explained in this chapter. By the way, it doesn't matter what you call these priorities. However, most companies really like calling them ROCs.